This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and those difficult moments along the way. A little bit about this introduction to the podcast. Well-known guests! Jesus. Here with me.
Start the new year.
Start off well on the front foot. I'm Giles Brady Phillips, and with me, as ever, is the gorgeous Jim Daly.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks. I'm not feeling gorgeous at the moment. I'm feeling quite tired, so that's a nice confidence booster. Yeah. Happy New Year to you and to all our listeners. Yeah. How was your Christmas?
It was nice, quiet, actually, in the end. Yeah, we all had colds. I think nearly everyone had colds in the whole country. But yeah, we had a quiet one, but it was nice.
I've just got over a cold, which has gone around our family. Our littlest one, 10-week-old, has got it as well. He's very congested. So yeah, everyone's getting it. But it's nice to be back podding, isn't it? It's nice to be back. It feels like ages since we did the last pod.
It does. It seems like months and months. I mean, it probably wasn't that long ago. But
3 weeks ago, I think. But yeah. It's great nice to be back at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is indeed. And we've got a good one this week, actually. I'm just looking at the photos now. Oh, they've come out well. We've got a cracker this week. Someone you know quite well.
Yes, it's the brilliant director, Martin Owen. He's, as we found out on the pod, he's also been an actor. Directing and producing is his main roles in life. Great guy, great to chat to. Obviously gave us lots of insights about the industry and how it works, and his journey into doing it via, via acting and performing. And and tells us a bit about growing up in the Northeast, quite near where my dad used to live. So yeah, it was a really good chat.
I had to at one point Google a film that I was slagging off to make sure that he wasn't involved in it. I wasn't slagging it off. I was using it as comparison to old. We talk a lot about 80s movies, and because he's similar sort of age to us, so very much that nostalgic based in the 80s and 90s. But I was using it as a comparison to talk about old movies and now. So I actually didn't finish this current film, so I might try later on to finish it. It's not a bad film. Anyway, I'm gonna stop talking about it because I don't want, in case we do get someone
who comes on who's involved in the film.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that was great. Actually, that movie was great. Yeah, don't listen to episode 191, but otherwise, it's a great movie. Really interesting guy, Martin. Like, great, easy to talk to, and you know, fascinating career. Some really lovely insight about how he works, and he wouldn't slag off actors. I mean, God, just too professional. But, typical, isn't it?
But plenty of room for football talk and and analogies. Which I know you love.
Yes, which you know I love.
Yeah.
I mean, we've literally kicked off the new year by just going straight back to old habits.
Yeah, there's no new blank. It's the same old stuff.
Hopefully, that's what people are looking forward to. Hopefully, they weren't expecting anything new. Yeah. Hopefully, they're just looking forward to the old.
Yeah, we weren't going to provide it.
No, exactly. No, we know what we like and we just stick to it. And that is what we do. Can I do a quick shout out to my solo show before we crack on? Is that okay? I'm doing my Edinburgh show. It was called, I know I talked about it a lot during the summer, was called Jim Daly and Football and Fatherhood. I'm doing it again one more time in London. It's probably the last time I'll ever do this show because I'll then be cracking on with a new show at some point. Thursday the 9th of February, so that's about a month away, at 6:30 PM at the Bill Murray, which is a really lovely, lovely venue in North London. Tickets are £8. And they're available now from angelcomedy.co.uk, but I'll put a link in the show notes as well. Please do come along. It's a 4-star show. Got rated 4 stars and was actually pick of the Fringe during the Fringe as well, which made it one of the top 200 shows of the Fringe, which I was very, very pleased about. And it's a show about football and fatherhood, funnily enough, but it's also about sort of growing up and all sorts of lots of things for people that aren't football fans or parents as well. It's a show for everyone. So please do come along if you're free. It'd be lovely to see you there. It's quite a big room, so it'd be nice to sort of pack it out. for my, and it's being filmed as well, so it'd be really nice to pack it out. And if people could come along and drink lots and laugh, that'd be great.
Yeah, like,
anyway,
yeah, laughing's the main thing at a comedy
show. Main thing, yeah. But if, it's a really fun show. I'm looking forward to doing it again. So if everyone's available, then yeah, be lovely to see you there on the 9th of Feb.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, everyone get down there.
Thanks, man. Should we crack on with the episode?
I think we should.
Yeah. Would you like to introduce New Year? How about you do the
intro
bit? Oh, hang on. And then I do the, I always do the outro. Let's just see what happens. You do it and we'll see what happens at the end of the pod.
Okay. So our first pod of 2023, this is the brilliant Martin Owen on the Blank Podcast. Well, Martin, it's lovely to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today. Now, I thought we could broach the subject of football early doors because we're all big football fans here. Jim's in his Palace. Well, several layers of Palace merchandise by the looks. Am I right? Are you from Darlington? Is that your?
I am. Yeah, I'm from Darlington. Yeah.
So why do you support Liverpool?
So my dad is Newcastle United supporter, and when we were very, very young, I think like I was five and one of my two brothers was like 4 years old, and my dad took us. There used to be a little sports shop in Darlington called Simpson Sports, and they were like one of only two places in Darlington you could get like new football shirts. I'm not selling Darlington very well here, straight out of the gate. But anyway, my dad took us there to get a Newcastle shirt, but they didn't have Newcastle shirts in. And I was drawn to Liverpool shirt. And my brother was drawn, fortunately, to a Manchester United shirt. So I know, terrible. So I then, that was my kind of start with Liverpool when I was five. And yeah, the oldest of my two younger brothers supports Manchester United, which is terrible. Oh, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It really bad.
Oh, your dad must have been gutted.
Devastated. I think he was probably more devastated about my brother, to be honest, than me.
Yeah.
Because at the time as well, because it was the 80s, so at the time, like, Liverpool was the best. I'm surprised at that era they had a Manchester United shirt in stock, to be honest. Because that was... Yeah.
That was a barren period for them.
It was a terrible period. Like, absolutely terrible.
Not trying to age you, but would that have been like a Crown Paints era shirt?
It may have been, yes. I would like to say it was the Candy shirt, but no, it wasn't. It was Crown Paints.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was a sports shop in my town in Seaford, probably a bit like your sports shop in Darlington, which had football shirts, but they were all really old ones.
Yes.
So even like... when the Premier League had begun, they still had the Crown Paints Liverpool shirt in there, like an antique on the wall that you could still buy at full price, you know.
Yeah, it's actually nuts. It's nuts now what vintage football shirts cost you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Jim is a big aficionado of vintage shirts. He's got quite a few behind him.
Mamma mia. Yeah.
A lot of them aren't that vintage. The one I really want is a Crystal Palace 97-98 by Munich Adidas kit, but it goes for like 150 quid on eBay. And
Jesus.
I just can't. Wow. And I have one from back then, but it's a size small because I was only 14, and so I just done the COVID gut and the dad bod combo just means it doesn't stretch over it, unfortunately. So yeah, but it's funny, like, there's a theory, isn't there, about football shirts, about teams wearing red. Like, red is like the winner's color, I guess. Maybe it's because, like, historically teams in red teams do better, but it's interesting that, like, in that moment, that clearly worked. So actually, maybe there is a theory behind red football shirts, like, not just like winning, but like attracting eyes and attracting fans.
That's very true, actually. I don't know what it was because I wasn't like I didn't know anything about teams or anything or players or anything. I was only 5 years old, but it was just I was drawn to the shirt. I also like, if you remember, like when like the Crown Paints and the Candy as well, they had like. They were in that like embossed like white felt.
Yes.
And I really like the feeling of it. I really like the feeling.
Very tactile.
Yeah, yeah. I was a big fan of that. So I think maybe it was that.
Yeah. Jim, I have one of those. I have, because I've got a... Hang on, I'm getting hot now, so the layer's coming off. I have a Palace shirt that I bought off eBay from 94, 95 that I did have as a kid. But like,
is that
a
TDK one?
TDK, yeah. But that's like, the shirt's long gone.
This is very niche.
Oh, it's so niche. You're right. That weird felt. Like, what the fuck is that stuff? I don't know. Like, it's... And Palace recreated a Tulip computer shirt, like a 92 shirt last year.
I've got that.
So you know, like, everyone recreates them now, all these companies recreate them. But they found the felt. They've like found this weird green felt. I don't know where they got it from. I mean, it's probably asbestos or something horrible.
Well, I ordered a Liverpool one online 2 years ago from one of these companies that recreates them. And it didn't have the felt. It was just like, it was just printed on like plastic. I was like, this is awful. Like, terrible.
You need the felt. Yeah. You need the tacky, awfully produced felt. Like, that's what it's about. I might try and see if I can find that shirt.
Go on, you go and look while I ask Martin about Darlington. I know Darlington a little bit because my dad and my nan were from Durham. So we used to travel up.
You have no idea of how many shirts.
So I'll fucking box them. Yeah, so we used to get the 125 up every summer. And obviously Darlington was the stop before Durham, County Durham, pretty sure. So nearest neighbours. So yeah, what was growing up in Darlington like?
I mean, I think, you know, it's a kind of, I guess, predominantly a kind of a working class northern town. And I think probably like my experience of growing up was probably very, very different to, I certainly know from a lot of people that I know that I work with, say from London or what have you. It's very, very kind of different upbringing. I'm sure it's not the same now, but I think the biggest thing about, I think growing up in the Northeast in the 80s and the 90s was that it was kind of like, there was a limited number of jobs into which you may go into. So I remember being at school and doing like the film, the foreman at school, where it was going to predict what you're going to be. And I remember all my friends finding it hilarious because obviously answering the questions as someone who's naturally creative, I got a hairdresser. Like, so my friends are like, that's hilarious. And then I seriously remember my teachers at school being like, oh, maybe you should consider hairdressing. What is it you want to do? And I was like, I want to work in film. They're like, stick with hairdressing. I said, hang on, I'm not a hairdresser. Like, I don't want to cut hair. Like, it's not, I've got no, and I, you know, anyone that cuts hair, you know, like anything, I'm sure that they love it and have a passion for it, but I had zero passion for cutting hair. But I, at one point, seemed to be getting shoehorned into that by my teachers at school, which was strange.
That's really interesting.
Weirdly, that's the second time we've talked about, Giles and I were talking about cutting hair earlier, because
we found
the new barber that he really liked.
I was going to say, that's a nice cut you've got, Giles. I'm just going to get my charger for my laptop.
Thank you very much.
It's a very nice cut. When did you have that done?
What day was it? Wednesday, yeah.
It's a good cut. Do you want to see the shirt? I got the shirt. So I got both shirts.
We want to see the shirts.
Both originals, I assume. So that's the...
It's perfect for predominantly audio.
I'll take a picture later. that's 97, 98.
Nice. So that's a nice shirt. One. That is nice, that shirt, actually.
That's the Hopkins
one, isn't it? Hopkins one.
Yes. Well, yeah, before, 2 years in a row. And then that's the felty TDK.
Yeah, nice. You haven't got, it's not got dirty either, which is nice.
No. And unfortunately, the other shirt I've got, so this would have been one of the first shirts I ever owned, which is Nutmeg. Do you remember those, Giles?
Nutmeg.
I think it was in-house, actually. Nutmeg.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is a very cheap branding.
And this is off eBay, but it's definitely genuine because it's the TDK there, but you can see it's got a bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's got a bit mucky. Yeah.
There must be someone that could clean that somewhere.
That's a beauty, though. That's a beauty, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And look, it's got they've got the felty badge as well.
Yeah, yeah, I love the felt badges.
Oh, man, that's special.
That's legit,
isn't it? Yeah, can I fit into that medium? 38-40. Oh, God, that's tight.
Yeah.
pour yourself into it.
Yeah, I'll make it work. I got to stop doing exercise and running, and I got to lose this weight. Christmas, I just leaned into it. I was like, do you know what? Cheese boards every day is Christmas. But then New Year, new me. Although my personal trainer's just had a baby, so I'm not going to see him for 3 weeks. So it's his fault. If I don't lose this weight, it's his fault. Him and his bloody penis.
So interestingly, and even at a kind of young age, you were thinking about working in film. What? Tell us a bit about your, like, what were the first kind of those sort of first film memories for you? Then was there a particular film that kind of captured your imagination? Or
yeah, definitely. I think like I probably like a lot of people when I was very young, I always just aspired to watch movies that I wasn't supposed to watch, you know? Yeah. And so I think like a movie that always stuck with me was Nightmare on Elm Street. Like that for me was like, I remember watching it even as a kid, watching it and thinking like, I'm scared, but I'm also like, I'm having fun. I was aware of that sort of like, why that's such a great film. It's kind of, it's got that sort of slightly almost a campy nature to it, hasn't it? You know, it's like it doesn't take itself too seriously, and it's just, and it's over the top, and the violence is like deliberately gratuitous, and it's just like, I remember seeing that at a young age. I remember seeing Bloodsport, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I had a period of being a massive Van Damme fan. I mean, like ridiculous. I remember having like my posters in my bedroom were like, I remember one point having like a John Barnes poster on one wall and then like an AWOL Jean-Claude Van Damme poster on. And I haven't really changed much since then, to be honest. You know, and I was like, I think back to then, and like I always try and think about the first music I listened to, and because I think, you know, music is so important in film. And it's like, I remember the first song I ever bought as a cassette was Salt and Pepper, Push It.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That was the first thing I ever bought. And then The Only Way Is Up by Yaz was the next one I bought.
Oh, my God, yeah. So last...
Remember that.
Yeah, the school disco end of my primary school year, sort of within like year six, I guess, it wasn't called year six in those days. But Yaz and the Plastic Population was... they played that about three or four times that night.
Wow, it's a belter.
Yeah, it is totally.
Weirdly,
belter.
That song reminds me of living in Spain, because it would have been late 80s. So I lived in Spain in the late 80s with my mum and dad and younger brother. And I just got a vision now of like going down the escalators in the shopping centre and it being played. But I guess it was kind of peak shopping centre song, wasn't it?
Oh, that's prime time shopping centre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prime time shopping center. I tell you what, I was watching yesterday, because I do this thing where I fall into like 80s online vortexes all the time, where I start, like, I look at something and then and I was watching yesterday, like, Stars in Their Eyes videos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, I just, like, I was, I was sat on the porcelain throne watching, Stars in Their Eyes. And I was late for it. I was late for a Zoom call. It might have been with you, Charles. And I was watching vintage Stars in Their Eyes.
Who were the transformations?
Well, I can't remember. Quite a few of the people, I didn't know who they were. I'll be honest, as in like the celebrities, I have no idea who they were. But one did Janet Jackson.
Right.
Which was quite good. And then I started thinking, oh, Matthew Kelly, You Bet. So
yes.
So then I went into a You Bet vortex. Now that, let me tell you, it was a good show.
It was, a great
song. It had a great song as well. That they should bring that back, because what I liked about that show was, like, I've got the attention span of a small monkey. So it's kind of like, I always have done. But what I liked about You Bet was it was quick. It was gratification. Getting this guy on, he's going to see if he can like jump a BMX over 15 old ladies. Do you know what I mean? And it's like brilliant. Brilliant TV.
Yeah. And also it was that was kind of pioneering in getting like audience participation with like them choosing as well, like if they thought they could do it or not.
That was amazing. Like it was.
Oh yeah. Was there an audience angle? Was there?
I'm sure there was. Like they pressed a button if they were like. And you voted, didn't you?
I think it was. There was one bit at the end where the audience had a vote on like the last one of each show.
Ah, okay, that was it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was. That was a great TV show.
You know, if they bought, if they brought that back, it would be Ant and Dec.
100%.
Ah, no, it'd be Ryland.
Surely. Oh, yeah, Ryland. Yeah.
He is very good, to be fair. But there, I'm going to listen to the theme now because I don't remember it. But you're right about the.
Da, 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 Well, that didn't happen.
Oh my God, that is superb. It's almost synced up in my ears, actually. Oh my God, what a tune!
To Stars in Their Eyes, one of my favourite episodes of Stars in Their Eyes was when a guy came on as Christopher.
Oh, wow.
And then the next, because I think he won the series or something.
Okay.
And then they had like Christopher and the guy together on a sofa on like one of these morning like TV shows, like Good Morning Britain or something. And I remember Christopher was gushing about the guy being him. And it was so awkward and weird. You know, he's like looking at him going, this guy's so good. He's so good at being me. He's like more me than me. Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, Chris.
How bizarre.
I couldn't tell you what Chris de Berg looks like.
He's quite an unusual look.
Yes, is it?
Chris de Berg. Yeah. He looks...
Niche look.
Yeah.
He looks like a disgraced Tory MP.
Yeah, there's a bit of there is a bit of that about him. Yeah.
Do you think there are podcasts? I'm actually googling it now. There must be podcasts about retro TV shows because I feel like we could just do a spin-off now, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and because what you do in your head is I will then jump to the next dot. So I'll be like, okay, you bet. Then I'll be like, oh, Gladiators. Do you know, jump to the next one that would come at you like that was either the next year or was the same channel later in the evening. But I used to love Gladiators. One of my brothers used to like get all the, like probably like most people, get all the cushions off the sofa and stack them up so we could do the pugil stick thing.
And the Travelator. Oh, Travelator was so good.
Always a favourite.
Actually, going back to You Bet, because you made a really good point there about like it was, they got to the core of like, it was fast. It was almost like reality TV now, or maybe like TV now, I guess, because like everything's so quick because of like social media and stuff. But it was ahead of its time in a way. I wonder if like, do you think TV shows, not reality TV shows, what was it? Game shows were sort of better back then?
100%. I really do. Like I know the reason why was because there was like now there's so many different platforms and channels. It's like probably less time goes into the creative development of a show. It's kind of like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's try and what's the cheapest way we can make it in case, you know, whereas once upon a time, when you had those original four channels that then became five channels in the UK, there was a lot less content available, wasn't there? You know, and even to when you know, watching films, it's kind of like you would genuinely kind of take the time to write, okay, that film is showing on that channel at that time on that day. I'm going to watch that, you know? Mm-hmm. And then our only other resource for getting films was to rent them, you know, was to go to Ritz Video or whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, I worked in a video shop in the 90s.
I knew that. 90s. I remember you telling me that. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And funny enough, the guy that owned it was a big Jean-Claude Van Damme fan because literally... like he'd had every single Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and when a new one came out, you remember like video shops, if there was a new release, they'd have like 20 copies of one film and then you'd get like five of the, you know, I guess chart, they were looking at charts and stuff. He would always like go against the charts and always get like 20 copies of the Van Damme movies, which you know, there'd only be about three people in the town that wanted Van Damme, but yeah, it's interesting.
I've got a question about 80s movie, 80s and 90s movies. Why do they feel so great to watch? Like, what is it because they're like, are they filmed on a different sort of reel, or is it nostalgia? Is it the editing? Is it the photography? Is it the way it's filmed? Is it because that just takes me back to being a kid? Or, I mean, not even that. The other day I watched While You Were Sleeping with Sandra, but I'd never seen before. Miranda's like, oh, I love this movie. And I didn't watch it because on Netflix it looks like a romantic movie.
Is that
and
Bill
it is,
Pullman in that?
Yeah, Bill Pullman and Sandra Bullock. And like, it looks like a romantic movie, and it is, but it's also a comedy. And it was really enjoyable. It took me back to like, it just felt warm and safe and enjoyable. Why is that?
And also, it's also, Jim, can I just caveat that you've been mainly watching Hallmark movies for the last month, so it probably felt like Citizen Kane.
True. Yeah. That is a good movie though. That is actually, I think it's two things. I think it's that, like, obviously, like, all those films were pre-digital, so obviously they're all shot on film, you know, and it has that look that we associate with films, movies, big movies, and there was kind of an era around about between about 2005 and 2008 where films moved into digital, but the digital was really it looked really flat. So if you look at films, certain films around that era, those 3 years, like, it really was like, man, some of the films looked terrible, and then digital slowly caught up to the scent, to the fact where now you can shoot stuff digitally that doesn't look that much different to something that was shot on 35mm, let's say. Mm. But I think with the 80s question, I think I know the answer to this, and I think it's because in the 80s you could make a film that if it was a good idea and had the right director and the right studio, they'd make it. So it could be like a lot of films I like are kind of like action, adventure, comedy, thriller, drama. They've got everything in them. So those movies like The Goonies, Back to the Future, like all those films, they cross across so many different genres. Whereas now, decisions are made on making films and they've got to be genre specific. And so it's kind of like you really can cross two genres max, really, if you want the film to be released commercially mainstream. So like, you know, like action comedy or action thriller, you get away with. But the moment it becomes like, well, it's an action thriller, comedy, drama. Like, you know, look at Big Trouble in Little China, right? There's a perfect example. Like, amazing film. It crosses so many genres and it doesn't give a shit. That's the thing. Yeah. It's just, it's unashamedly what it is. It's the same with The Goonies and a lot of those.
So I've just shown you, I've got on my desk a Lego
Kurt Russell. Hilarious.
Yeah.
So, I like that. No, I like that. I actually
love that movie.
I normally drink from a I drink coffee from a mug, a Tango and Cash mug.
Nice.
Yeah. But I think that's my theory is that because they weren't specific to a genre. You know, because if you look at The Goonies as well, like the stuff in The Goonies that if you're making that movie as a family film now, there's certain bits in it that you wouldn't allow to be in a film that was a PG or a U because it would be too rude. Or because, you know, you look at a film in the 80s, you watch a family film, quite often someone would like get their breasts out or something, like in a film. Yeah. It's just, oh, it's banter, it's a pair of tits, that's hilarious. But now it's like, absolutely not, you can't do that, you know, and then you're dealing with the whole thing of like, you know, everything has got to be in there for the right reason. And obviously, it all comes from an algorithm, doesn't it, I guess? It's kind of like, you know, like the streamers now, it's all an algorithm. It's all based on an equation of X plus Y equals success, you know?
Yeah, algorithm. I think algorithms have, I was about to say killed creativity. That's such a strong, I'm going to reel back from that. But in a way, they have helped, determine it. But that's really interesting about the genre specific stuff. I hadn't really thought about that, and I think it's absolutely right. The other thing I noticed while watching While You Were Sleeping, and I know you said Sleepless in Seattle, also not a bad movie, because I was trying to watch a Christmas movie, tried to watch loads this Christmas, and I was watching the new one, and it was on a train trying to get to a party on a train, kind of thing, I can't remember what it's called.
And you produce that, Martin? Last train, last...
Possibly, yeah. There's a chance. If you're going to slag it off, there's a chance.
No, there's... And do you know what? It was a great movie, and that's the end of my anecdote.
Who was in it? Was Michael Sheen in it?
No, I've seen that one, though. That's fun. That's fun.
Yeah, well, I think that's the one that you produced.
Okay, cool. That's fun. No, it was... some young guy was in it. Anyway, it was perfectly nice, but it moved quite slowly.
Oh, was it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's something like...
Was it the one where it was Asa Butterfield and they ended up at the opposite Christmases?
Yes. No, that's okay. No, I've seen that. That's okay. I enjoyed that actually a lot. That's got Danny Mays in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's really good in that. No, it's got someone else. I can't remember who. But anyway, it was perfectly nice, but it was quite slow moving. And I was watching for about an hour thinking, oh, okay. hadn't really sort of gone anywhere. And then Miranda was like, let's just put on an 80s movie, put on like, you know, While You Were Sleeping kind of thing. And it just rattled along so quick. There was no like, no dull moments. It just rattled. Sometimes I was like, oh, I'm an hour in and like loads has happened and I'm really enjoying it. And I wonder if that's something that's new to like movie making now.
Yeah, I think as well, I was talking to, I was having a conversation last night with a director, and we were just chatting on the phone. We weren't actually talking about work, we were chatting nonsense. And then we got on to, I can't remember what it was, like a particular film. And I started talking about how sometimes as a creative, like I know I've been guilty of doing it myself, that audiences are so much more aware of so much more in a film. So if you look at movies that were shot in the 80s, like a lot of the ones we mentioned, no one at any point during the making of that film was particularly bothered or would have thought about or considered, had a conversation about, like, oh, how does the lighting plan of the film affect the tone of the film? People looking at the lighting and the composition and the cinematography. And because we have so much access to so much content these days, all of us, just as people who watch films, we look at so many more different aspects of the film, like the sound design, the cinematography, and like, you know, like I'll be like sat watching a film, I'll be talking to my mother about a film, and my mum will be like, oh, the cinematography was really good in that, or like the lighting was really good in that, I thought the music was really good or something or other. And whereas once upon a time you just watch the film as a story, and probably directors focused solely on telling the story and working with the actors, and you do this and you do this and you do that. And I think that it's definitely something that I've realized that I want to try and get to a point where I start working more like that. So I thought that my job was to obsess over everything, and micromanage everything. And now I haven't done it for a few years. I look and I go, that's wrong. Like I should, the crew should be the exact same way that you should be with actors, which is you hire someone to do a job. Ultimately, that individual knows more about that individual part of the job than I do. Yeah. I know a decent bit about everything because that's my job, but they know what they're doing. So ultimately, if you were to do the same task 100 times over, they would probably do a better job than I would have editing the cinematography, the lighting, the costume design. And it's just, I think, trusting people and then just focusing on like telling the story, you know, and working with actors, I think is the key job, really.
It's called This Is Christmas.
This Is Christmas, yeah. Okay, I know that one. Yeah.
You weren't involved in it. I don't know, it's perfect. It's got Alfred Enoch as the lead.
Oh, no, we weren't. It was a Sky cinema film.
Sky.
Yeah, no, we weren't involved in that. I watched that film, and it's funny, the lead actress in that, Kaya. She's super talented, and like, so she's one of those actresses that you watch her in something and it's almost a disbelief that it's the same actress that you watch in something else, because she's like, she seems to be so different, and I think that's great. Like, she did that ice skating series thing on Netflix that was really intense, and she was brilliant in that. And then she was in the, did either of you two guys see the remake of Resident Evil that came out, was it last year?
No, she's in that, is she?
Yeah, she's the lead in that, and it's such a good film. And I was like, I don't know if it suffered from pretty big film coming out during COVID, so ended up just slipping out digitally. But it was a really good film. It was like everything about it I thought was really, really good. Like, it looked great. It moved really, really well. I felt like they told loads of story in like, you know, 100 minutes. She was brilliant in it. And it's one of those films that's like, hardly anyone seems to have seen it, even though it was quite a big movie. And I watched it, and you know, it was probably one of my favorite films I watched last year, actually.
Wow.
I thought it was really good. And I watched something else the other day. What was it? Oh man, it'll come to me when we're talking. I watched, and it, like, people have been slating it, and I really enjoyed it. It was the Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds Christmas film, Spirited.
It's fun.
I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was just, it was what it was, which was, it is a Christmas film of a story that we already know with a nice twist to it, you know?
Yeah, completely agree.
I was going to say, actually, it's interesting, you've obviously talking passionately about watching film. And I remember years ago meeting a script supervisor, and I was talking about like maybe wanting to get into the film industry in some way, either writing a movie or whatever. And she was like kind of trying to put me off, saying like, you know, working in film, you sort of lose some of the magic of watching film. Do you ever find that when you're watching a film, you're sort of looking at it from as a director?
I know a lot of people say this, but I don't. Like personally, I think there's a switch that you can just switch on and off. And that's what I do anyway. It's kind of, I could sit there and watch them all. Oh, had I done that differently? Oh, that's a continuity mistake. Oh, I've gone for a less powerful bulb in that scene. You know, it's like, it's, but you don't, I think it's something you either, you can just switch it off. Like I can just sit and watch a film as though the same way as if when I was younger, before I worked in the film industry, I worked at Pizza Hut. It's like, I can watch a film the same way now as I did when I worked at Pizza Hut when I was 18 years old, you know? But I do think that it's like, it's back to what I think I was kind of saying in this thing that kind of like, I think we all look at films now, a lot of people look at films, particularly people in the industry, and we're looking at all these different aspects. And the last thing we're just focusing on is just following the story and the characters. Because that starts and stops with that, you know, for me anyway, you know.
I thought you were going to say in the same way that when I worked at Pizza Hut, I could delete a pizza.
I can actually. Do you know what? Here's a story off piece. As I worked at Pizza Hut, I ate a lot of pizza, and I never went off it, I'll be honest. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I always like, it was always my favourite food, pizza. Mm. And then a few years ago, I couldn't eat pizza. I mean, literally, if I ate a pizza, I'm locking myself in the bathroom for an hour. Let's leave it at that. Like, I mean, I'm in a state.
And then you're going down some rabbit holes on Wikipedia.
Exactly. I am just getting lost online. But it was fine because of the special magic that is Pepto-Bismol, right? Yeah. And Pepto-Bismol, let me tell you, I drink this stuff, okay? And then last year, about 10 months ago, there was a shortage of Pepto-Bismol in the UK. Like, you couldn't get it anywhere. It was a manufacturing issue. Oh. Without going any detail, it caused me some issues last year, lads. I'm not going to lie. Right. Like, it caused me some issues. But now you still can't get it. But I'm making sure anyone I know that goes to the States, or when I go to the States, I'm coming back with like hand luggage full of Pepto Bismol.
This guy's trafficking Pepto Bismol across borders.
There's a movie in that, I reckon.
Yeah. I think there probably is. Yeah.
So two things about This Is Christmas. I'm sorry to keep labouring on this film.
Oh, right,
film.
We're going back to that.
It's only because, firstly, some of it was filmed in Hemel Hempstead, which is like not far from where I am, because he literally cycles at one point past my favourite restaurant in the UK, which is called in Hemel, called McDonald's. I don't know if you heard of it. called the Coach Inn. It's so nice. I was like, oh, Hemel. The other thing is they slack off Crystal Palace in the film.
Oh, come on.
At one point, he's going home and his wife is like on the phone, or girlfriend, and she's buying tickets. And she goes something like, get tickets for Chelsea for the boys. And then she goes, oh, actually, make it Crystal Palace. Might teach them some humility. Fuck off.
Ooh, that's...
Where's that come from?
That's brutal, isn't it? That's absolutely brutal. Yeah.
That's middle of nowhere.
I don't know who wrote it. Probably Millwall support or something.
Some Millwall support, Brighton.
Tell us about getting into film then. So how did you get onto this path to where you are now?
That's a good question. So I think when I was young, I wanted to be either a footballer, a tennis player, a secret agent, or work in film. And the other three became pretty unlikely pretty fast. But I was good at tennis, and then it just, like, I think, you know, I had an injury, and then I was out for a while, and then I just got distracted by the usual things that you do as a young guy, like, I guess, drink, women, you know, but I always had this, like, when I was at school, I did drama and stuff. I always enjoyed it, but as I was actually saying jazz earlier, it was kind of like when I you know, being from the northeast of England and kind of growing up in the 80s and the 90s, I didn't know anybody that worked in the film industry. So, like, you know, the only person from Darlington that I knew that was, didn't know him, but I never met him, but that was, that I knew was famous or worked on TV was Vic Reeves was from Darlington.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, Vic Reeves is from Darlington. And, but then I didn't know, like, there's nobody that you could ask that would say to you, or give you advice. Because obviously as well, this is kind of like pre-internet as well. So, you know, the internet came in school. Like, I remember it was 1995 doing, like, the internet was like, you're doing it in IT. Do you know what I mean? And then, and I couldn't even, I wasn't the best at the internet because I got kicked off the IT course, my IT GCSE, because the classic gag of, like, obviously one of my friends went onto my computer and put a video of, like, a man having sex with a horse or something. And then, and then I got kicked off the course. But then it was like, there was, even then you got, it was like, how do you break into the industry? So I kind of like my, I started doing like bits and pieces, like in front of the camera to try and get behind the camera. So, and I would do like, I did at one point like a lot of like daft TV commercials. So like, you know, like deodorant and shampoo and all this. And like, you know, like really, really bad. Like, I've been in some terrible, terrible TV commercials. And my mum actually has she has them all on a disc, all of these commercials.
Or like a whole reel of them.
A whole reel of them, mate, yeah. Like, she has a reel of these commercials I did. And like, I tried to just bury it, you know. But yeah, I did these commercials, and then doing commercials and things, I started to, like, you know, I was still like young at the time, and I was like starting to meet people, doing other bits and pieces in front of the camera. I had one bad experience where I did a job, and basically I had a scene where essentially it was like a sex scene in this film, and I won't say what it was, but basically I was supposed to be.
It wasn't a Pepto-Bismol advert, was it?
I wish. this was me trying to, like, when I was trying to figure out how to get into film. And anyway, long story short, like, got this part in this film, and at the time I was still only young. I was like, I don't know, 21, something like that. And I had this scene where this woman is supposed to be like a lot older, and she's like seduced this young guy, yeah. And
okay, like Mrs. Robinson.
I was going to say, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And this woman's on top of me, and she's supposed to be like, you know, bouncing up and down, doing the biz, and then I'm like all overwhelmed, and then the character, like, he realizes that she's like the wife of some guy that he's scared of, and he gets out of bed and leaves. And I remember when I did it, right, I was concerned about, like, oh, are people going to see me tackle, you know, and no, not at all, but you know, how, you know, they'll see your backside. So you get out of the bed and the camera's here, and then they'll see your backside. So I was like, okay, that's fine. But just as an FYI, like, I was sort of said at the time, I have nothing that resembles an ass. It's just flat. It's just like it's a back with a hole in the middle. And so anyway, did this thing, whatever. And then I remember sitting and watching it, going to this screening and sitting and watching it with my mum. My mum came along with me, sitting and watching it. My mum was just like laughing, and I'm laughing. She's like, and then my mum like taps me on the shoulder. She's just like, Martin. I'm like, she goes, you can see Willie. And I'm just like, what? And then basically I got out, and you could see my backside, but then on the opposite side of the room, yeah, was a very, very, how would it was, if it was like a wardrobe or something, like a shiny surface, and clear as day, you can see the reflection of my entire gear. So we had to like search them, or they had to like take it out or whatever, but like clear as day, there it was. So I was like, oh man, like I can't do any more of this stuff. I didn't really enjoy being in front of the camera. Does that make sense? I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked the idea of it, but in my head, it was always that I would use it to try and get a foot into the industry, because it was the only way I could think to do it. And my mum was also really supportive of me. My dad is supportive as well, but my mum was like quite relentless. I will relentlessly bang my head against the wall till it comes down. So it's so funny, because I would meet people now, still to this day, and I'll meet them, and they're like, "We met before." And I'll be like, nah. And they'll be like, we have. Your mum used to send me a headshot of you every single week for...
Oh, man.
Wow. And I'm like, yeah, and there's so many people I meet like that who I now, you know, work with as peers or whatever, who yeah, my mum used to send these headshots, and I used to have long hair. So I used to have a proper...
Oh, did you? Oh, man.
Whole, like, Bon Jovi thing going on. And it was like Bon Jovi meets the Strokes. It was odd. Like, it was a look, do you know what I mean? And I used to get, like, suits, right? I used to get suits, like, so they were absolutely, fitted. Like, so I could hardly move. And then, like a little flare at the bottom. And I would wear, like, Chelsea boots and vintage T-shirts underneath with this long John Bon Jovi hair.
Man, I need to see some
what a look.
I was really strong. Well, I thought it was strong. Looking back, it was horrendous. Like, my mother still has a picture in her house of me and my two brothers and my sister when I was like early 20s. And it's one of those pictures where it's like you go to a photographer and they take the picture of you and you're like, I've got my hand on my sister's shoulder and like this, you know. And my hair in it is wild. My hair is like, it's like so long. It's like almost down my back.
Oh, wow.
But it's got like highlights in it. And it was, and it's try to straighten it as well.
Wow. Speaking of, I really want to dye my hair. I really want to dye my hair blonde. I did it as a kid, man. And I really want to do it again. But my wife says don't, because I'll then have to change up my headshots and my agent might get annoyed. But I also think, fuck them. You know, yeah. I'm a creative. I do what I want.
You got to sort of like have that Paul Gascoigne when he was at Rangers type look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were 96. Really coming yeah. God, that was strong.
That was like a half and half type thing.
Gaz is probably my all-time favourite footballer, actually.
Yeah. Brilliant footballer.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I'm reading a really good book at the moment. Sorry, it's a bit off topic, called The Year Football Came Home or something. It's about Euro 96. It's really good. It's just like the guy's like done so much research about the build up and stuff and Gaza and then the dentist chair. Oh, mate, it's so good. I'm rattling through it. It's a really good book. I can't remember who wrote it, but it's, yeah, if you're into football, it's definitely worth getting. Just going back to like, so obviously that acting wasn't the plan. It was just like, it was a means to an end to get behind the camera. But I'm wondering if like now that's giving you like an understanding of like when you work with actors, of being on the other side of the camera in a way. I know, is that something many directors maybe don't have?
I think so. I think that, I remember doing stuff and people would, directors would say, like, even if you're doing a commercial where you're crossing a street and then you're like, I don't sweat. And then it's like, sure. And there'd be me like, you know, like, let me shirt off, doing something. And, I remember even doing stuff like that. That was, I knew at the time it was like, you know, I was just doing it for the sake of doing it and to get money. And I was also doing those things to, by this point where I was still doing commercials, I was living in London and I was using the money from the commercials to start to try, we were trying to make Me and My Pals, we were trying to make like short films and stuff, you know? But I remember at the time thinking to myself, why is this guy like so bothered about like directors who said, don't put the deodorant can under your armpit, Martin. It needs to be at a 45 degree angle from you. Like just nonsense, just stupid crap. And do it like this, do it like that. And it always stuck with me. But I hate that. I hate you telling me how to do something when you've employed me to do the job. So just trust me to do it.
Yeah.
So that was definitely something that I've always taken forward, that I'm not there to tell people how to act. But if I'm directing, I'm there to simply trust the people that you've picked to do the job, and just you're just there to kind of tweak it and make sure that all the performances of individuals might be amazing, but just make sure they're coherent. Like, I'm not there to tell every single person how to act, how to speak, how to project. Like, it's like, I find that so annoying. Like, that if I did that to someone and they just chinned me on set, I'd be like, yeah, I had that come in, to be honest. You know, like I fully deserved that. I just don't like that. So that was definitely something I took forward. Yeah. But also now that I'm, you know, producing more, so, you know, that's been really interesting I look at myself when I direct now and I'm producing and I'm like, I can be a bit of a difficult dick sometimes, actually, you know, and I'm not necessarily aware of I wasn't aware of sometimes the scale and the pressure on the decisions that you make as a director, the impact that has on the people who are, you know, have responsibility, both kind of that financial obligation, if you like, you know. And that's definitely been another thing, as well as doing a bit of acting when I was younger. That's another thing that has definitely informing me as the director, I think, you know, that remembering it's a job at the end of the day. And it's like, it's you're there to do the very best job that you can do, but not to make other people's lives more difficult because of something that I might think that I'm fighting for is right. It's not right and wrong. It's all subjective at the end of the day, yeah. You know?
And I guess it's a collaboration, isn't it? Like, you're not, you know, everyone's got their roles and responsibilities, but you're all working together towards this common aim rather than like, I'm in charge, I tell you. It's like, well, actually, if we all work together, then in theory, everyone gets there quicker and in a nicer way.
Yeah, no, that's it. I was talking to somebody recently who had who didn't know me, and they'd said to someone else, "Oh, what's Martin like to work with?" And the person that asked was someone that worked with me a few times, and I was, when they gave me what they said to me, I was like, really like, please, when they said to me, "Oh, well," this person just said, "Oh, that Martin treats making films like it's a team, like he doesn't treat anybody," and I always try to employ that mentality and obviously try and get other people to think like that it's like, you, the film doesn't happen without the director, but the film also doesn't happen without the runner, without the caterers, without the costume, makeup, all of these things, every single person in that department is a cog in a machine. And it's like, I never want to be in a position where there's a queue of people at the bus waiting for the lunch on a film set, and I walk to the front and take mine first because I deem myself to be more important. Yeah. Like, the day that I do that, I'm a twat. As far as I'm concerned, that's just what I think. I just think it's like anything, isn't it? It's like football. It's like anything. It's making a film is a team. It's a team sport. It's like, you need all of those individuals to come together to create something, you know?
I mean, I know Giles will tell me now that you won't say this, but like, I really want to ask you about any twats on set that you've dealt with. But I know you're too professional to tell me, probably on air.
Yeah, no, I tell you off air, but no, I think it's just, you know, I would never name names because I always think, well, if someone's acted badly, I always don't know what they've got going on in their day or what they've got going on in their lives at the time. I guess sometimes try to think like that. But yeah, you know, there's definitely, there is definitely actors, for example, that I work with, have worked with who have not been the easiest to work with. And then there's been other people who've been amazing. And I just think that, what I realise is that the actors who are easy to work with, I think, take the ethos into their job that I think you take into if they were working in a factory or they were working in a shop or working in whatever it is, any industry, is that, like, normally the people who do well, you obviously get people who are absolutely ruthless. I mean, ruthless, and don't care about people, and they get to the top. And that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is treating people with respect, and knowing that those people you treat with respect that maybe be deemed to do a job lesser than you, one day is probably going to be hire you for a job, you know? Yeah. And like, I won't name anybody who I thought was difficult to work with, but I would happily name people that I thought were amazing and were an inspiration. And, you know, like, two people that I worked with that I thought were just really inspiring were Michael Caine and Gary Oldman. Two people who both have the same quality, which is they've obviously got to where they are because they're really nice blokes. Like, and they turn up every day in good spirits. They know their line. They know all the basics, right? So they're not there like going, "Oh, what was my line? What was this? What was this?" And they know that. They've consumed that before you start rehearsing. And they're there trying to go, "What more can I do? What more can I do?" And want to be around the other actors and talk to people and get to know people and are friendly to people. And I remember Gary Oldman goes around, you know, and shakes everyone's hand. I'm nice to meet you. You know, and they'll be blah blah. And I'm Gary. Michael Caine is the same thing. Pretty nice to meet you. What's your name, son? Da-da-da. Michael, yeah, I know who you are. but just a really, really, and I see that, and when I see that in people like that, I'm like, it reinstates to me that I know by trying to be nice to people and treat everyone the same, that is the right thing to do. Mm. And sometimes people will say to me, you shouldn't be like, you should be more aggressive and this and that and the other. And I'm like, I just stand by the fact that I just don't think it should be like that. You know, I think you treat people as you want to be treated. I've always thought that. I was brought up to think that. And when you see actors like that, and there's certain young actors as well that I've worked with who I see are going to have a career. They're going to have a great career because they're like that as young guys. You know, it's like, oh, now I'm super famous and I'm going to be a pain in the ass. So yes, some people are like that, but other people aren't. They're like just like normal guys who just want to crack on. They see it as a job. I think that's the key thing. Remember, it's a job. It doesn't define you as a human being. It defines you as your career. It defines you as an actor, as a director or a producer or whatever. But it doesn't define you as a person. You know, you still go home and you're the same person. You just might be a bit more famous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So just on directing, what's the kind of, I guess, a day-to-day kind of, what are the jobs and stuff that you have to do as a director on a day-to-day? Obviously, you're kind of got your hands over most of the project. What would be a typical day in the life of a director on a set?
So for me, when I'm shooting it, the one thing I don't like about film is the hours. It's like ridiculous. It's like, why do we have to start so early? You know, like, and people will try to give me the thing of like, oh, it's daylight hours now. So I'm like, yeah, no, that's not true. That information will come from me, but it's just, people just buzz off it. I'm sure they do. But it's like, my day will be like, I'll get up, always go to the gym before I go to set. Like, so if that means I've got to get up, like, I, you know, sometimes I'll be in the gym at like 4:15 in the morning or 4:30 and I'll have a workout. I normally will work out with an actor. There'll normally be an actor who's either a mate of mine previously or someone I've met in that film who likes to train, you know, and I like to go to the gym in the morning. I just do 45 minutes, go back to whatever hotel I'm staying in, literally arrive at set, have my breakfast out of a box on set. The way I do it is I will walk the day with the cinematographer. So like my cinematographer, Hovard, is Norwegian. We've worked together now we started working together. We shot our first film together, I don't know, 6 years ago or something. And I worked with the people beforehand. Everyone I worked with was great. And it was just what I like about Hovard is he's a very sort of like, he's a very diplomatic guy. He's a very quiet guy and knows what he wants to do and has complete confidence in his own technical ability. And so we'll walk the day, we'll discuss what we're going to do. We normally have script supervisor will walk it with us. Again, that's quite unusual in the sense that like, I try to use the same script supervisor and everything. And, you know, the script supervisor that I normally use, she again is a friend. And with the three of us, we'll walk the day, we walk through it, what we're going to do, have it all, go through what we've already previously planned out, the shot list, go through our shot list, go through all of that. Then go through anything that we know is going to be a problem during the day. If it's going to rain, if an actor's hungover, you know, like all of those things, identify the problems and then, you know, start sort of crews getting set up and then we'll start, you know, try and turn over as early as we can in the day. And then the plan that we set out at the start of the day always goes completely out the window.
And is it a bit like when managers get a football job and they always bring their same backroom staff and assistant manager? Is this a similar sort of thing with you having the same cinematographer and stuff?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I it's where I work. I try to bring people, even as well when you're producing, you bring in people that you know will do the job. Yeah. That you know, like that person is, every person that you bring in that you trust is someone you don't have to worry about. They're going to do that. I don't have to micromanage them, be it as a director, be it as a producer. You don't have to micromanage them. They can go on and do their job. But anyone that's like, and I like to, you know, everyone needs a break. Everyone needs a chance. Everyone needs to be their first film. But every person that's a risk, that's their first film, that is someone you've got to keep an extra eye on. Mm-hmm. Not because they're not talented. It's just normally they're not as kind of like off fair with like the workflow, you know? But yeah, I'm a big believer in finding a team, keeping it, but also not being naive enough to know that those people, young people coming through who are super talented and people just need a break, you know?
Yeah. But I guess like you could, if we've bringing new people in, you've only got so much energy and time in the day. So like, it's actually unfair if you bring in too many new people that don't know the ropes. You can't actually then do your job and give them the time they need. It's a balance, isn't it, I guess, between making sure that you can keep an eye on those people, but also you've got people behind the scenes that do what you do. And then you can concentrate on... It sounds like you're sort of spinning a lot of plates, basically, in that role.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You're spinning... I actually used to spin plates. I worked in a circus for a little bit. little weird fact. I worked in the circus, literally would do spinning plates and all sorts of
Wow, perfect training.
Perfect training. I was well prepared. Juggling, spinning plates. Idea. Yeah. I was well prepared for working in the film industry, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Martin, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. So many good insights into No, thanks, Martin. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking about football shirts.
Well, there you go. Martin Owen on the Blank Podcast.
Beautifully done. This, I mean, I think my...
When you were pointing at me, it's you.
That was nicely done. Very nicely done. Yeah, Martin, what a top bloke. Yeah. I mean, so easy to talk to. Some really... I mean, obviously the football chat I loved and always will. I loved all the stuff about working as a team on set and collaborating. Mm. And in the few handful of acting jobs I've done, that's always the energy I try and take on set as well. It's like... Be pals with everyone, and everyone wants the same thing. So if you're nice to them and nice to the crew and as well and the director and other actors and stuff, then in theory everyone gets there. But it's nice to see that that's replicated from behind the scenes as well. So I'd imagine if you're someone that's worked with Martin, it probably could be quite a pleasant experience. And I think that's just, but you know what I'm like. I like everyone getting on, but it's nice to hear that that is something that's replicated in the industry.
Yeah, and I think that's important to say that. I mean, obviously, he mentioned two big stars that he'd worked with in Gary Oldman and Michael Caine, and how, you know, we hear this a lot, actually, don't we? That the bigger the star, sometimes the more humble and, you know, workman-like or workwoman-like they can be in the workplace, and particularly in cinema and stuff. You know, you've got huge, huge celebrities, but often they're the hardest working. And, you know, with any kind of, you know, not just creative jobs, but any jobs, as long as you like turn up on time and you're nice to everyone, then you're going to get rehired, aren't you?
Well, that's always my theory. I mean, it doesn't always happen. My rehiring rate is not huge, but I think surely that's the way to be. Like, surely that's a more enjoyable existence for everyone than being an arse. Although, as Martin said, like, people do have off days, and I think that's totally fair, and you don't know what's going on in people's lives and stuff, but it is nice to hear that, like, yeah, there are people out there that just are nice. I don't know, maybe I'm a very simplistic person, but I like it when people are nice.
Yeah, it's nice to be nice.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And to be fair, everyone that's come on this pod has been as well, so we're very lucky. So at least they're all saving their nice personalities for coming on the pod, so we'll take it big time.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, thank you to Martin for kicking off to 2023.
I know. This is our fifth year of doing the Blank Podcast.
Oh, my word. That's mad. Yeah. That's absolutely
It's gone by in a storm, isn't it?
And we're hitting the big 200 in a few weeks.
I know.
My God.
I'm still trying the Obamas.
It's not answering your calls.
Yeah, they've not answered any of the calls.
Oh, man, this is 194. So, yeah, we're only 6 weeks away from big 200. Oh. Well, join us in 6 weeks to see what we're doing there. And the previous five.
Yeah. Just join us every week.
please stick with us. Yeah, but so, we hope, you know,
every episode should feel like the 200th.
Well, yeah, if someone could leave us a review on iTunes saying every episode feels like the 200th, that'd be absolutely great. But it's good to be back. We hope all our listeners,
unless the 200th episode is shit.
Yeah, okay, reserve judgment and see what it's like first before reviewing. Please do review us though if you're enjoying the pods and you know you've enjoyed them. Maybe it's your first one. If it is, welcome aboard. Maybe you've been with us for a long time. There's a big back catalog if you are new. But leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your pods, and it will help us get heard by more people. But if you have enjoyed the pod, thank you, and we hope everyone's had a good break, Christmas or holiday break, whatever you do, celebrate or don't celebrate, and happy new year to everyone. And it's good to be back.
It is good to be back. It's bad to be good. It is good to be back, and nice to see you, Jim.
Yeah, good to see you too, bud. And we're back next week, of course, aren't we, with another episode.
As we
crack on with 2023. But I guess until then, have a good week, mate, and take care of yourself.
Likewise.
Thanks, man. Same to our listeners. Have a good week. Look after yourselves. And we'll see you again next week on the Blank Podcast.
Don't get cancelled.
I forgot about that.
Media Podcast.